I call the Committee on Economic Development to order. I see a quorum is present. Members, can I please get a motion to approve the minutes from 3/10/23?
Madam Vice Chair, I'll move the minutes for March 10th, 2023.
Representative Kosnick moves the approval of the minutes for March 10th, 2023. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you for that. Hi, Representative and Chair Hassan.
Hi.
Chair Hassan moves that House File 1289 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Chair Hassan, why don't you tell us about your bill and proceed? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 1289, which is the creation of Emerging Developers Fund. We have talked about equity and support for businesses in this community, in this committee a whole lot. And I'm excited we're talking about the Emerging Developers Fund, as this is crucially important for closing the wealth gap in our great state. According to research, Minnesota is the best place to live in America. One of the best places to live in America. It regularly produces some of the highest average scores in nation's SAT exams, boosts disproportionate share of the Rhodes Scholars and admissions to MIT and Harvard. The famed Mayo Clinic, it's I knew that was going to be the expression. It's an international leader in medical research and development of the vaccines for critical diseases such as the COVID-19. Housing prices are considerably low compared to the national median, and shopping is a delight as one of the North America's largest indoor shopping mall. Surprisingly, Minnesota is also one of the worst places for black families to live, measured by racial gaps in unemployment rate, wage and salary incomes, incarceration rate, arrest rates, home ownership rate, mortgage lending rate, test scores, report child maltreatment rate, school disciplinary and suspension rate, and even drowning rate. Black families are far worse off in Minnesota than anywhere else in this nation. And these are not my words. These are the research done by Professor Samuel Myers, Jr. from University of Minnesota. Believe it or not, at one point in Minnesota's history, black residents had high home ownership rates, high levels of academic achievement, impressive contributions to the rest of the world. They were thriving black, there were thriving black-owned businesses and a vibrant community of fraternal and social organizations and leaders in virtually every walk of life. And today, the time is right to close the wealth gap. With our state's economy doing so well, with $17 billion surplus, we can fund to support emerging developers who lack the access to capital and networks that can tip the balance to project success. House File 1289 is about economic justice. It's about creating an even playing field for individuals and entities who would like to advance in the developer's world. House File 1289 would create a revolving loan fund with no interest or low interest rates, up to $50,000 for pre-development and up to $500,000 for short-term bridge loans. This bill is about creating capital and providing access to those who have been left out. This is timely. This is a timely discussion because we're talking about inequities that exist in our systems, the systems that we ourselves created. We're talking about providing opportunities for folks who do not come from generational wealth. The fund would be accessible to people who have traditionally left out of the real estate development, minorities, those who come from low income, women, and people with disabilities. Among the intended projects are the ones in disadvantaged communities underserved by traditional developers or that would increase the availability of affordable housing. This is the right time. This is the right investment. This includes how to find pre-development funds, which are used to things like site inspections, city entitlements, ecological reviews, or agricultural and engineering fees. Those often need to be done before a developer is eligible for a grant or a tax credit. I want to highlight that we do this already with the Department of Agriculture's revolving loan for farmers. And this is a good model. If it's good enough for our farmers, it should be good enough for our emerging developers. With that, Madam Chair, I have a couple testifiers who would highlight the importance of this bill and why we need this fund.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Do we have our testifiers here already? Please make your way up, introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, who you're with, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Oops, sorry, Chair. Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Peter McLaughlin. I'm the Executive Director at the Local Initiative Support Corporation, and it's always good to be back in the House as a former member from the late 80s and early 90s, so glad to be here today. I'm here as the Executive Director of LISC. We're a CDFI, which makes investments in low-income communities and tries to provide access to capital, technical assistance, and other resources that are necessary in lower-income communities that don't have good access to that capital. That's what this bill is about. We have run a program for 2.5 years, an emerging developers of color program. So I'm happy to be here, and I've got two of our participants ready to testify. They're the eloquent ones on this. But I would just say that we got into this work because there was this incredible demand out in the community. There's this desire to become developers in BIPOC communities. It's a desire to help build wealth in the communities, build generational wealth, but also to build projects in communities that will make a difference, that are tied to the communities. And you'll hear some stories today from two of our developers. This is a national phenomenon. The New York Times had an article last weekend. The official data were that there are 112,000 real estate development companies in the country, and 1,000 of them were BIPOC owned. So 111,000 out of 112. And so we are trying to fix that. This bill would help us to get resources into the hands of the BIPOC developers so that they can succeed. We know why there aren't a lot of BIPOC developers. There were restrictions on home ownership, and a lot of times the home is what you mortgage to get your business started. The lack of networks among people who are just getting into the business is an impediment. We're very intentional about both those. We want to provide capital. We want to create a network that our program participants can be in, and then the technical assistance, access to that, and frankly, cash, liquid cash is important because there are fees up front. The pre-development portion of this is important. So that's why we're here. Capital, networks, technical assistance, that's what we believe in. And this bill would help provide those. And we're very excited to support it. And we're happy to have a couple of our participants come up and testify today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And welcome back to the legislature. It's an honor to have you here. Our next testifier can make their way to the table. And when you arrive, introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, who you're with, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Johnny Opara, and I'm the president and CEO of GL Companies. We are a locally based real estate development firm based here in the Twin Cities. We specialize in developing multifamily product here in the Twin Cities, both in the urban core and the suburbs. We have been doing this since 2018. And we are really proud of the fact that ever since getting into this vertical, that we've been able to make effectively trends into making sure that we can, one, be an example of what it takes to work really hard and make sure that we can continue the path to effectively being a developer. And since 2018, I've partnered with LISC, Twin Cities, to work with cities and different other stakeholders within our capital stack to make sure that we can effectively be in a position to hopefully one day close on larger transactions, such as, for example, one of our projects called The Hollows in St. Paul on the Greater East Side. It's $18.4 million project we just completed at 520 Pan Avenue. Providing 62 homes for individuals and families. Our next project, which is Wingstead Commons, which is in Brooklyn Center. It's a $23 million project. We've been working on that project since 2019. This space that Peter just spoke on, as well as Chair Hassan, Madam Hassan, and that is, this is a very complicated space, and it requires a level of intelligence, character, relationships, network, but more importantly, capital, in order for you to be able to tap into these networks that are kind of close to our vertical for emerging developers that are looking to make a difference in this space. One of the things that I've experienced throughout this time is that the level of capital that's needed prior to entering into the space can range from, you know, city fees. If it's a private owner, it could be, you know, holding money in escrow. It could be a number of different things that developers, at least from, you know, coming into this vertical, not understanding the amount of capital that is needed to be in a position to hopefully continue on this path to become a developer. Those relationships and ties to capital in terms of pre-development or funding for development is going to be key for any developer, specifically emerging developers who don't have the necessary resources to be able to continue on this path. So I would say that from my experience since 2018, from the Hollows to Wankstead Commons and other projects we're working on, it has been very rewarding, but at the same time challenging in trying to build, one, a company, but at the same time trying to build a organization that has steady capacity, that has the necessary resources, that has the wherewithal, the networks to be able to build high quality products that are sustainable, that's gonna be around for a long time. And as a long-term owner and operator, it makes sense if you are gonna build within the urban core or within areas that look like me or represent a community that the majority does look like me or are women, it would be cool, it would be nice to make sure that there is a developer that has shared similar experiences, understands, you know, the nuances of what it takes to grow within those neighborhoods and be able to make something out of themselves. You know, as an immigrant who came here when he was 1 year old and been able to figure out this thing we call life in this state, it has not been easy, but at the same time, I do see that as a competitive advantage in being able to find a path and hopefully be an example to others that are looking to get into this space that is so complex called real estate development. So I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I appreciate you. I do love the sound of generational wealth building. It sounds great. I'm excited about this bill. Our next testifier can make their way up to the table. And then please introduce yourself when you arrive. Share your pronouns if you'd like, the name of your organization, and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, representatives, it's an honor to be here. My name is Nawal Noor. I am the CEO and founder of Noor Companies. We are a mission-based social enterprise for-profit developer based in Minneapolis. Our work centers on community-centered work. We've worked on a project in Phillips neighborhood. As a developer, I started out in 2012, and the program for emerging developers at that time did not exist, and it made it really, really difficult to be able to be a developer in the state of Minnesota, because we don't come from generational wealth, and there are no friends and families to go and call and ask for money. And the traditional financing mechanism, which is getting a loan for a business, does not work for development, because there's an inherent risk that's required to hold patient capital until the project is a full project, because several projects die several times before they become real projects. And so I'm here to testify in front of you to say I'm in full support of this bill, and I appreciate the honest sort of interest and also support for this bill, both from Representative Hassan and from all of you, because I think it's the first of its kind, but it's the beginning of many more things that are required to really make sure that this industry is open to developers of color and women, and it's essential that we make sure that we support developers of color in many ways. Pre-development dollars are typical dollars that are really, really hard to come by from a financial institution. And so having low interest or no interest, and I hope that this becomes a grant, is essential component to really making sure that after you have site control that you can make the project become a real development. I will say the first project that I worked on is in South Minneapolis in the Phillips neighborhood. It took 5 years for that project to become a real development project, and it took several millions of dollars, and it was a community-based project. And one of the things that's essential about developers of color is that they address the community needs, and oftentimes those projects, large developers are not interested because it doesn't meet the returns that are required for investors. And so what that means for developers of color is that they struggle with projects a lot longer. They need more capital, and it's not available. And one of the things that I love about, I'm the second in the second cohort of LISC, which is this year, and I'm one of 14 people who are part of this, and all of them have site control for their projects. And what this program provides is capacity building. And for me, for a person who has been in this business for since 2012, which is over 10 years, scale is really important because you can do one-off projects all day long, but it doesn't necessarily make you a real developer that can make a difference in the community and the impact that we need to have. And so I will say one of the things that I want to highlight is that development is one of the best ways, especially real estate ownership, to create wealth in communities of color. I'm an immigrant. I came here as a 12-year-old immigrant, as a refugee from Somalia. My parents lived in low-income housing, affordable housing, for a very long time. I'm an affordable housing developer. We've done multiple projects in Minneapolis, one of which is Without Commons in the Seward neighborhood, 39 units, large family units, which are really well needed, especially in the communities of color, in immigrant communities where they have large families. That project took 5 years to get fully funded through the state bonding through MHFA. I've served on MHFA's board. It is essential to make sure that very few people actually were able to apply as developers of color through the MHFA application. And the reason is because not only do you need to have site control, you need to have the money to be able to really be an additive to any developer who wants to partner with you. It's the first time since George Floyd's murder for people to be open to the idea of partnering with developers of color. This program is an idea. It's a place for people to get resources that are very much needed in the development space. I'm grateful for your support. I'm really grateful to be here, and I hope that you will support this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Do we have any other testifiers? Any members of the public wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll turn it over to member questions. Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question. First of all, I think it's great because it is supporting the emergence of local developers, with incentive to build up their own communities and transform neighborhoods statewide, promote economic development. So great, and St. Cloud's ready anytime. But my big question is, of course, as we always ask, the fiscal note. It's open in the bill, and just would like to ask you what you think and if you have any models or ideas or how this will transform to a fiscal note.
Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Perryman, for the question. And We will connect with St. Cloud, hopefully, with this project. It's a blank appropriation, and the reason is I don't know what my targets are going to be. And this is not a project that we have funded in the past. It did pass the House floor and the Senate, and it was included in the omnibus bill last time with the leadership of Chair Noor and Senator Pratt. So the reason why it's blank is I don't know what my targets are, and it's a project that's near and dear to my heart, and I really want to fund it, but I don't know what my targets are, and we'll see what the targets are. This bill is being laid over, so we'll come back to it.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Any follow-up? Or
thank you. No, thank you, Chair.
Representative Lee Kosnick.
Thank you. Chair Hassan, similar along the same lines of the blank appropriation, what was the amount that was in the previous session for this project, just to give us a ballpark, and if that's a similar amount that you're anticipating once you receive your target, perhaps? And I know you can't commit to an amount, but just to give the committee and the public an idea of how much of an appropriation was done in the previous session, and is that similar, something similar to what you would anticipate the committee may entertain this session?
Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Lead Kosnick. I don't remember what the last year's proposals were. I was not in this committee, but we can ask our House Research.
Thank you, Chair. And Ken Savory, would you like to comment on this?
Chair and members, I don't have that information read in front of me, but I can look that up as we discuss the bill more and refer back to the committee.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any other member questions? Seeing none, Chair Hassan, any closing comments?
All right, my computer works. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for this great conversation. We must be intentional about reducing disparities, as I believe that somebody was intentional about creating this disparity sometime in our past history. And I want to again highlight that we already do this with the Department of Agriculture's revolving loans to farmers, and we can do it in this space. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Chair Hassan moves that House Bill 1289 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus package. Thank you, Chair Hassan. I will be turning the gavel back over to Chair Hassan, and thank you, everybody, for being here.
All right, our next bill is House File 1920 with Rep. Koslowski. Rep. Koslowski, you are a member of this committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I would like to move the bill.
Right. Please explain your bill.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here and hearing House File 1920. This bill provides an increase to the base budget appropriation for the redevelopment grant program that's administered by DEED. This program helps communities fill the financial gap that often exists for projects looking to reuse and redevelop existing sites. While the initial investment costs to redevelop a previously used site can seem like a really daunting prospect, the return on investment for these types of redevelopment projects is extremely impressive. As you can see in the DEED handout in your packet, over the life of the redevelopment grant program, just under $80 million in state investment has been leveraged well over $3.5 billion in private investment and has helped create and retain over 30,000 jobs. So in Duluth, in my home community, this program has successfully utilized, been utilized many times and has helped fund abatement and demolition of portions of the Lincoln Park School building, which led to the creation of 50 affordable housing units. It's also seven which are set aside for households experiencing homelessness. It was also utilized to help prepare the Pier B site for what is now a successful hotel space on what used to be a cement plant and one of my favorite restaurants in Duluth. And most recently in 2022, it was also utilized for abatement and demolition on a former National Guard site that had been vacant for over 20 years in our community. So this site will soon be renovated and repurposed into a shared commercial kitchen, food hall, training, and exhibition space with additional leasable office space that will also support food sovereignty and entrepreneurs and emerging entrepreneurs of color, too. So this $672,000 redevelopment investment will leverage $13.7 million in private investment that would not have occurred without these critical redevelopment funds. The last thing I want to note is that it's actually the Economic Development Association of Minnesota Day on the Hill. So welcome to everybody, and I'm really proud to have Katie Bachmeyer with me today, who is the board president of EDOM and has firsthand experience working with this redevelopment program as the economic development coordinator for the city of Lakeville.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. As was said, my name is Katie Bachmeyer, and I'm here today representing the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, or EDAM, as we call it, as board president. And if you don't know, EDAM is a statewide association with over 500 members in both public and private sectors in rural and urban areas from all corners of the state, and I come from the city of Lakeville. So we are very grateful to the committee for taking time today to hear HF 1920, a bill that would increase the base funding level for the redevelopment grant program at DEED from roughly $2 million up to $8 million. With two grant rounds administered per year, which are split between the seven county metro area and greater Minnesota, the increase provided in this bill could allocate $2 million in redevelopment funds to both the metro and greater Minnesota in each grant round. Funding for the redevelopment is the highest program priority identified by EDAM members through our survey, and current demand for this program greatly exceeds supply. While we appreciate DEED's transfer authority from the Minnesota Investment Fund to help fund redevelopment, EDAM's members would like to see dedicated and reliable line item funding for this vital program because redevelopment projects are complex, multifaceted, and require extensive time and planning to be successful. Consistent and predictable funding would help our communities prepare for these impactful but complicated projects and deliver powerful value in both rural and urban areas. As you can see, referenced in the materials, I'm just going to reiterate, the program has resulted in the redevelopment of 1,450 acres of land, as well as the creation or retention of 30,000 jobs, and the addition of 8,500 housing units across the state. The $80 million in redevelopment funds awarded to date have leveraged over $3.5 billion in private investment and increased local tax bases by almost $59 million, which adds vibrancy and revitalized spaces across Minnesota to help meet our community's needs. Given the impressive track record of this program, EDAM feels that stable, consistent, and reliable funding for the redevelopment grant program would deliver a huge return on investment for our communities. So on behalf of EDAM's 506 members statewide, we respectfully ask that the redevelopment grant program receives an increase to its base funding level. Thank you for the time, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kozlowski. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill? Lead Kosnick.
Thank you, and I am very proud to have one of our economic development personnel here from the city of Lakeville. We got some other Lakeville stuff coming on today, so might be close to Lakeville Day instead of Iron Ranger Day that we had last Friday. But I appreciate the work that you do within the city of Lakeville, but I know that there's a whole slew of people across the state in similar positions that are working hard to keep their communities vibrant, to strengthen their business climate in each community across the state. And I will be supporting this this bill because the funds that are utilized in here do have a reinvigorating effect in our communities and keeps our state economy strong and resilient. So thank you for presenting and bringing the file forward.
Thank you. Any other comments? Final word on the bill.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Again, we urge you to support this bill as it will support projects that otherwise would not be able to be online and regenerate our economy. So thank you so much.
Well, Rep. Kozlowski renews our motion that this House File 1920 to be laid over. Thank you very much. The next bill is yours again. House File 1631. Would you like to move your bill, Rep. Kozlowski?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would like to move my bill.
All right. Well, tell us about your bill.
All right. So, again, thank you for the opportunity here. This next bill, House File 1631, it's really important. It is also a bill that has bipartisan support and was actually carried by Representative Rob Eklund, who's here today as well. The pandemic, as we know, has really resulted in border restrictions set in place by both the United States as well as the Canadian governments that put the border communities in a really tough economic bind. The border community economies have been intertwined since the communities existed, and I'll also add that with our regional economy in northeastern Minnesota, along the whole Canadian border, that we are also deeply interconnected as well. The communities, especially of Grand Portage and International Falls, have faced economic hardship through the loss of availability of their natural trading partners. And today I actually have a chair of the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa in my home community to talk about the economic hardship that they face due to the border crossing, as well as to talk about the real impact that the investment and support of these dollars would have on communities like Grand Portage. So I will like to turn it over to my testifier at this time.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Anin Bouju, Robert Disha, Indigenous. I'm Robert Disha. I'm the chairman of the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Thank Felicia for bringing this forward for us. Since the pandemic began, nobody has suffered like the northern border communities. Grand Portage has probably been hit harder by any community in the state of Minnesota. 90% of our business comes from Canada, the Thunder Bay area. We operate a lodge, casino, trading post, which the revenues support our community. They support our health care, they support our elders, they support our infrastructure. Treaty obligations are only funded at 38 cents on the dollar, so the revenue that comes from our casinos helps offset what we don't get. Let's see here. In 2019, there was approximately 440,000 border crossings at the Canadian border. In 2022, there was 144,000 border crossings. So we're down about 300,000 border crossings, which are customers for our business and the other businesses along the border, like Ryden's Border Store. They Mike testified in the Senate for this bill. They own a business there, a gas station also. As of right now, we're about 30% back from what we were pre-pandemic. Employee-wise, pre-pandemic, we had 440 plus employees. We were the largest employer in Cook County. We have approximately about 310 to 320 employees now. So all around, we're in pretty tough shape up there. All the tribal governments were awarded ARPA money for I can't remember how much we got there, but anyway, a lot of the communities were able to use their money for projects, infrastructure projects, different things to help their community. Grand Portage has had to use their money to survive. We're running low on those dollars. We're hoping something changes. I guess I can add the thing, like I told the Senate the other day, the Canadian dollars were at 68 cents on the dollar right now, so that don't help. But where do I got here? I just appreciate you hearing my testimony for this bill, and it is important for the northern borders. So, which.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Rep. Kosofsky, I believe you have a DE1 amendment.
Yes, Chair, that's true. We do have an amendment, and this bill will be being laid over, as you can see in the bill, that we added in the Northland Foundation, helping to set up criteria and kind of manage the equitable distribution of these grants, setting some dollars, designating $50,000 for each awardee, as well as the exact dollar amount. This bill was included last year in the 2022 Jobs and Labor Bill at $7.5 million, and that bill package ultimately didn't cross the finish line. So we'll be continuing to work on the language and then bringing that final amendment back for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
So we wouldn't act on this amendment today?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. All right. Discussion on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, look at the issues, and when I see another blank, which was brought up before, any idea? There's no money appropriated or a budget or numbers given, estimate, idea, to make a decision that on this, I don't see that. So do you have any idea of what that number would be?
Chair Hassan and Representative Weiner, thank you. Yes, yeah. As I just mentioned, that it was included at $7.5 million last year. So that would be the range that we're looking is $7.5 to $10 million is is the target we're looking for.
Okay. Thank you.
Lead Kosnick, do you have a comment?
Thank you. I appreciate the ballparking, at least, of what we're looking to do, and I recognize that the committee needs to receive a target, and you, Madam Chair, have the privilege to put the pieces of that puzzle together. So we're not adopting the DE, and I didn't quite catch why that was. I was distracted there, but can you clarify that for me?
Rep. Koslowski.
Sure. Yes, thank you. Because we need to do some more cleanup language on the amendment, including putting the dollar target in there before we move forward to adopt it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is it still the intention to have Deed do the granting to the Northland Foundation?
Rep. Koslowski?
Yes, and thank you, Chair, and Rep. Kosnick for the question. That is one of the pieces that we want to lock in to make sure that it's the Northland Foundation that will be managing that, and then they'll be setting the criteria and distributing the dollars. So, yes, we'll be working with the tribes and the partners to firm up those details before we move forward.
Lead Kosnick.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. And Representative Kozlowski, looking at the 2019 990s for the Northland Foundation, pretty solid net assets at that time. I don't know what their current one is. This is the most current statement that was provided to me, but there was like $85, $83 million net assets at the end of that year. And so I was just, do you have anybody from the Northland Foundation here? My question being, how are they using those assets, and if their asset balance is similar currently, a couple years later, I recognize, why aren't they using some of the current assets available, because that is within their scope of that nonprofit, rather than adding more funds to it? I don't know if someone's here from the Northland Foundation, but if not, I recognize you might not be able to. I don't want to put you on the spot for that, but yeah. I think that's something that the committee needs to address. We've got a nonprofit with $83 million, and we're going to provide them with more funding, but if we could just get some clarification, I think the bill might need a little more work without having some of those questions answered.
Rep. Koslowski.
Thank you, Chair, and Rep. Kosnick. Great questions, and you're right. I don't have somebody from Northland Foundation, so we can certainly follow up on those questions, but I think that is definitely the question. You know, the intent is to get the dollars out to the communities that need it, not to give a particular foundation dollars. You know, they're going to be sending these out to the communities. And so we can definitely follow up in terms of more details on how that will work with the Northland Foundation, but I don't have
I also want to note that if it was 2019, COVID happened, so I'm sure that $85 million is not currently what the foundation has, but we'd love to get that information, and Rep. Koslowski will follow up with us.
And we'll have time to discuss if you do include it in your omnibus, but those kind of questions that I think would be pertinent to the committee and have some of those answers would be helpful. Thank you.
All right. Rep. Katisotun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for carrying this bill this year. I think just kind of going off of Representative Kosnick's question there, and the way that I was understanding the language of the bill, it's not that the Northland Foundation is coming to the state and asking for money. It's that they're a chosen partner to administer this grant program in a community that they're much more familiar with than, say, one of our state departments. So is that correct?
Rep. Koslowski?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and Representative Katisa Batun. That's exactly right. They were selected because their particular expertise and relationship, especially with the tribes within our northern communities. And so this is not an ask from the Northland Foundation, but from working with the tribes as well as with Deed, who originally, I believe, was going to be managing these, but because of those relationships. So, yes, thank you for that. But either way, we'll follow up and make sure that folks have that information going into the final approval of the bill.
Thank you. Rep. Katisotun, do you
have? No, thank you for that clarification.
All right. Rep. Wiener, do you have more comments?
Just one other question, okay. Ma'am, and not knowing how all of this flows sometimes. If another entity like Northland works with them, does the reporting then go through deed? I've asked, and I was appreciative. On the last bill, there was reporting through deed. So would Northland then also be reporting through deed as well? Is that how that works?
Representative Kozlowski. Thank you, Chair. And Rep. Wiener, unfortunately, I don't have the bill right in front of me, but I do believe that that reporting is coming through deed. Okay. But I don't have that language right now.
We can ask our
House research.
And find out. Ms. Annishley.
Chair and members, yes, so the grant will still go to deed to go to the foundation, so deed will still be involved and generally does their normal reporting about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Final word on the bill, Rep. Kozlowski.
I just want to say again, thank you for the opportunity to hear this bill. You know, as Minnesotans, we care and we step up for each other, whether it's the natural disaster like a flood in northern Minnesota or it's a global pandemic. We step in and we step up for each other. And so this is really an opportunity to do that for communities who are in some dire straits and really need us for their families and communities and for our economy. So thank you so much, Jimmy Gwich.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The next bill on the calendar is 2072 with Chair Zhang. Chair Zhang, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the House file 2072 be, actually I have an amendment, Madam Chair, a DE1 amendment.
All right.
The amendment is just to correct the language because we supposedly had two bills drafted, but this one went through, and so the DE1 gets a bill in a shape on that we'd like to hear.
All right, discussion on the amendment. Don't see any. All those in favor of adopting, where is the amendment? The DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The amendment is adopted, and House File 2072 is before us as amended. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The African Economic Development Solutions has been around since 2018. It provides assistance in a variety of forms to African immigrants in Minnesota who seek to start business or grow a business, including one-on-one coaching, loans, and technical assistance. So today I'll keep it very short because we have I have a testifier here who will share with you more about what the organization does and where the funds are going. And so I'll hand it over to Mr. Gene Kalugu.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Hassan and member of the committee. My name is Jean Galgalu. I am a founder and president and CEO of African Economic Development Solutions, a nonprofit organization that serves African immigrant community in Minnesota. We started in 2008. AEDs provide business development training. It's a 12-week of training program designed for aspiring or experienced businesses to start or expand their business. We provide technical assistance, which is cultural specific technical assistance in different area of the business need, including marketing, pro bono attorney, financial business structure, and money area of the business need. We provide lending and financial capability, home ownership, education, and housing counseling, and creative placemaking, which is the intersection of art and culture for economic development strategy. Through that, we do community building, which is Little Africa Annual Festival, gathering African and the non-African immigrant at the Hamlin Midway through art and culture to showcase the hard work and resilience of African immigrant in the state of Minnesota. We started that in 2014. Over the years, that event grew in numbers and diversity, bringing diverse group of people and share the experience. And just 8 years in during the COVID, the need for our service substantially increased.
In 2020, we served 1,400 clients. In 2021, we served 966. In 2022, ADA served 895 clients. The business that we supported not only creating job for themselves, creating job in the community, and rotating a job in the community, and also paying taxes. According to Dr. Bruce Corey research, which was published in 2015 and updated in 2020, recently it's updated, research and African American market study, African immigrants in Minnesota have a buying power of $2.8 billion and pays $341 million in taxes, spending $1.8 billion on Main Street sourced and fueling local and regional economy. That is a number that the huge impact that African immigrants doing in our local economy. That numbers, and in 2015, that research showed that nearly 67% of African immigrants lack access to loan fund for their business, while that research also showed that 97.3% says they had saving and checking account at their bank, but still lack accessing to loan fund. There are many factors, but there are two major factors that we experienced why African immigrants don't have access to loan fund. The major is no credit or bad credit, which is one of the top reasons African immigrants don't have access to loan fund. The other is no collateral. Lack of collateral is another second issue that we see prohibiting African immigrants from accessing loan fund. This is a one-time request that to increase our lending capacity to provide access to loan fund, and so African immigrants can increase their job creation and their business in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Is that the only testifier, or do we have others? Okay.
Yes, I have another.
Welcome to this committee, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my name is Idris Muhammad. I am from African Economic. I work for African Economic Development Solutions, and I'm here to testify. I actually happen to be an immigrant from African immigrant from Somalia, and I've been here for 25, 26 years. I have firsthand experience with the African immigrant communities as an immigrant myself, living within the community. And at the same time, I happen to be a former entrepreneur and business owner. I experienced the problems, lack of access to funding that African immigrants experience. And I did experience that. Now that I'm a practitioner for the last 6 years, I am on the other side of the aisle. So I have both sides of experience. And that the underlying structure of businesses actually require funding, which is obvious. And there is, first, before I go to that, I would like to reiterate, as Gene mentioned, Dr. Corey's research, which really gives us an invaluable insight of African immigrants here in Minnesota and other research too. Within the underlying structure requires funding, and there is a positive direct correlation between funding and access to capital. The more funding you have, the more actually you can provide, obviously. And this underlying structure also requires us to provide training for African immigrants because of certain needs for them to get the skills they need in order to run their businesses. With that, I would like to say I support this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And is that it for your testifiers?
Yep. I believe so.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure I don't leave anybody behind. Discussion on the bill. Rep. Katisa Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Zhang, for bringing this bill forward. I represent Eden Prairie, which has a very large Somali population, and just reading the language of the DE, I'm curious, and potentially your first testifier could maybe speak to this, but just in terms of, I'm not seeing any geographic specificity in terms of where these grants may go, if they're weighted for women in the African community, if they're, you know, weighted between the metro area, the suburbs, greater Minnesota. As we know, the Somali population is growing in the St. Cloud area a lot. I know Representative Perryman could probably speak to that. So just wanted to, just out of curiosity, if there is any geographic or other divides or weights in the appropriation.
Thank you, Representative Katisa. And I understand there's no limit as long as you identify as a African.
Mr. Chair, we go through the chair.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that the bill is an appropriation for anyone who identifies within the language group. I will let Mr.
Mr. Gilgallo, go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative. African Economic Development Solutions serve African American state of Minnesota. Happen to the demographic, we have about 45% are female, and 50 are male, and 5 is unidentified. And we had a client in Rochester, St. Cloud, and Worthington, and this will help us to expand to other location as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that clarification. I know that our immigrant populations are growing all over the state of Minnesota. It's really exciting. It's one of the ways that, you know, we can hopefully mitigate some of our population changes as we go forward into the next decades here, and I appreciate you and all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Rep. Perryman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, I'm just wondering if there will be a cap or a limit that per entity can borrow.
Madam Chair, I'll have yes. My...
Mr. Gilgallo, go ahead.
Chair Hassan and committee member, sorry.
It's okay.
For startup business, we do have up to $25,000. For expanding business, we do up to $100,000. For those who are in business and want to invest their on their real estate, we do up to $250,000 to support them so they can gap. Mainly our real estate is focused on gap financing.
Well, yes, Madam Chair, may I have one more follow-up? Representative, those are great numbers, and I'm just wondering, in the background, how do you track all your information and monitor it and report it back?
Mr. Gilgallo.
Madam Chair and Representative, provide a loan to, we take information, their tax, we get their tax information, and we get the first, before they get any loan, they go through our process, which is business development training program. It's a 12-week of training program designed for those who want to start their business or expanding business to go through that process. Through that process, we get all the information we needed. So there's application process, and we get all the information that are required.
One more question,
one more
Chair?
Okay.
Yep, one more follow-up. Do you collect any tax information from these groups or support material to kind of, I'm not trying to micromanage anybody. I just was wondering how the partnership does work on the background of the back office on their year-end taxes or things of that nature.
Mr. Cotello.
Madam Chair and member of the committee, yes, we do collect 2 years of tax for anyone who receive a loan from us.
Great. St. Cloud's ready. I trump you, Rep.
And it's my understanding, Mr. Gagello, that the people that you work with are people who wouldn't qualify loans on the traditional banks and are considered high risk to lend to. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. Most of our African immigrant community are the high risk, and that's why they don't attract traditional financial institutions. And like I said earlier, lack of credit, bad credit, is the same thing. If you don't have credit, some of our folks, they say, I don't need to borrow. And then all of a sudden when they start processing for loan, they don't have any credit. And some of them, they must have their credit and the bad credit. So most of those we work with, they don't have enough collateral. You know, collateral come with generational walls. And most of our African immigrants under 30 years in this country, and the wave came in after 1990s. And most of us, I am African immigrant, originally from Ethiopia, and came here with empty pocket, with great hope and dream and aspiration. And I am one of the American dream. And so we, with not having wealth from parent and from family, collateral is just impossible for many of our immigrant business. They start with what they have, and then most of those don't have access to loan, and then what they do, they turn to their friend and family. It's called circle of lending. They turn it to the circle of lending, Iwito, and they name it in different community, the circle of lending, and they invest that, and all of a sudden they become capital starved. So they don't attract business, traditional financial institution, and then though they become, they cannot expand their business, they cannot grow their business. That's the main challenge. That's why we need injection so we can provide loan to those businesses. I have so many stories that the business that we helped, today they are very successful. One of this business is in Cedar Riverside business. And she just needs a small loan to start her restaurant in Cedar Riverside. And the requirement for the need for ADS didn't have the loan fund. The maximum loan we had was for credit building, $5,000 to give for people to build their own credit. And then I asked one of my donors, and they say, can I use that loan in order to give a loan? And they say, go for it. So we use that $5,000 to support this small business. And we ask our partner to bring $10,000. Another partner brought $10,000. We invested our $1,234. $21,234 help for handicap accessible bathroom and exit door to get a liquor license. That business under 2 years, she said, I want to buy a building. And say, oh my God, how you can dream that? And then when we learned, her revenue grew double digit. And we jumped and they turned to our friend again and they financed it. Under 2 years, she owned the building. Today, I'm really proud to say in St. Paul, this business, over $1 million building she have in here in St. Paul and opening next chapter of her business. So that is just one story. There are so many stories that they just need, they don't need handout. They need jump start. I think this is investment as a region we are doing. We're not giving handout. We're investing our infrastructure because those are the business that create job for those who are unemployed. Those who cannot be employed in corporate. And so This is an investment in our region to make sure that we attract talent and retain talent in our region. Because when someone don't succeed in here, don't have reason to stay here. So it's investment we're doing as a region, and I encourage you to vote and invest on this loan fund.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, final words on the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As you can hear from Mr. Gugu, he so well shared his story and to testify the problems that our African immigrant community face today. And we have a solution, and I hope that we're able to invest in our immigrant community, where every dollar we put in, we know that comes back multiplied and supports our economy. And so with that said, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Jerry Shong. And with that, the bill is laid over. Our next bill on the calendar is House File 2631, Vice Chair Hansen. Vice Chair Hansen moves that House File 2631 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. House File 2631 appropriates MNSBR, Inc. $5 million. This company supports small businesses up to 500 employees in accessing federal funding that is available to small businesses for research, development, and product commercialization. Each year, the federal government has about $4 billion of funding available to small businesses through the Small Business Innovation Research Program and the Small Business Technology Transfer Program. These are also called America's Seed Fund. SBIR and STTR funding is non-dilutive funding, so small business owners don't have to give up equity shares in exchange for investments to do their revolutionary work. I've talked a lot in this committee and other spaces about the importance of investing in small businesses in Minnesota. And I think in that conversation, a lot of us envision, you know, small businesses that we can see in our community with storefronts or web presence or Main Street-like businesses that provide products and services maybe directly to consumers. And we have to be sure that when we're investing, we're specifically investing in all types of small businesses that play a critical role in our future and in our economic development. This bill is a reflection of investments specifically in scientists, engineers, startups, and small businesses who specifically need research and development funding. These investments create jobs and draw workers to Minnesota. They transform the future by adapting to the needs of a changing world. And they stimulate economic growth that can reach around the planet. These investments will support the business ideas that are inside the minds of our littlest Minnesotans who are in STEM programs at their school or community center right now, or that are drafting up their latest invention in a school science fair project. These are the businesses that are brewed in the minds of clever and innovative Minnesotans who have an idea or a concept that can make the world a better place. They can meet unmet societal needs. They can advance life-saving technologies and do so much more. The founder and president of MNSBR, Inc. is a retired United States Navy Commander, Pat Dillon, who has aided businesses to bring $68 million to Minnesota over the past 9 years. Currently, Minnesota ranks as 20th in the nation in receiving federal funds to our small businesses, and we can do better. This investment will build out a robust MNSBR, Inc. for businesses seeking to bring federal funding to Minnesota for innovation, for job creation, and an emboldened school-to-work pathway for generations to come. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier to tell you more about this particular field of work.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, committee members. My name is Pat Dillon. I am the founder and president of Minnesota SBIR. We are a nonprofit organization to help small businesses access this critical federal funding. Our focus, of course, is the $12 billion Small Business Innovation Research Program and the Small Business Technology Programs, also known as America's Seed Fund. Each fiscal year, the government sets aside about $4 billion a year. And the programs are in existence until 2025, so that equates to about $12 billion available for small businesses all across the nation. This is a very important source of early stage capital for technology commercialization in the United States. These are congressionally approved programs that enable U.S. owned and operated small businesses to conduct research and development that has this potential for commercialization. Now, each of these companies that receive funding through these two credible programs can reach into the millions. And we support those kinds of projects. And you'll hear from one of our award winners today, Andy Opes from Fistula Solutions. These programs also support industry and academic research collaborations. So we work very closely with the University of Minnesota and the Technology Commercialization Office. These programs also support STEM students through the SciTech Internship Program, which you may be aware of. These funds support also the SBIR-SETR matching program that is part of Launch Minnesota, and so much more. And in today's hearing, I was caught, I recognized that what we do is also creating generational wealth in our state through these two programs. So securing funding is a complex and highly competitive process. And we don't get our fair share. We can do better. And so our goal is to build out a team of experts who will allow us to attract more dollars to Minnesota statewide. I've been involved with this program for 30 years. And since 2014, we've started MNSBIR. And since that time, we have generated about $68 million across 95 small businesses, which has generated about a $40 return on investment. SBIR and SETR funding is a force multiplier for our innovation economy. And since 1983, Minnesota firms have secured over $900 million that has resulted in thousands of good-paying jobs, STEM jobs, novel products and services, private investments, patents, and so much more. And it has supported minority, women-owned, BIPOC businesses. As you can see, the legislation is really important, and our $5 million is going to generate more capabilities for us and increase our capacity to hopefully get to $100 million economic impact over the next 10 years. This funding will fortify our services and create a dynamic and robust organization with a dedicated team of professionals to deliver outreach, education, and coaching to small businesses statewide. Our plan includes expanding our program to include up to 20 new high-wage jobs to provide those hands-on professional services to at least 180 small businesses statewide to support the next generation of our advisors and coaches to deliver this one-on-one expert guidance and support. We know that small businesses need to innovate to stay competitive. We are proposing an Innovation 25 Accelerator to engage Greater Minnesota existing small businesses with no experience to become SBIR-SETR recipients. We want to create a technology commercialization institute, and this institute will deliver on-demand, one-on-one business and technical assistance to build stronger and more globally competitive small businesses. We also want to create a phase three sole source acquisition or assistance program. The legislation allows companies to transition into procurement on a sole source basis. This is huge for Minnesota companies because it's going to result in sole source contracts from the federal government.
Ms.
that Fiddling, could result.
I don't want to cut you off, but do you mind wrapping up?
Yes, Madam Chairman. And we also want to create the Defense Medical Network. We have a lot of defense opportunities at the federal level to support our men and women in uniform and our veterans. And now I'd like to turn my testimony over to Andy Opes, CEO of Fistula Solution, and he will be followed by Russ Strati and the University of Minnesota, and Candy Waltz, a CEO of Baby No. One of our presenters, Dr. Efrain Torres, is a startup from the University of Minnesota. He's a PhD candidate, and he will be defending his dissertation later this year. But he was unable to be here today due to an investor meeting that he has. Thank you very much.
Since you guys have multiple testifiers for this bill, may I say that we need to just conclude testimony in 2 minutes. And today we go up to 12:30, so folks who are wondering if we're running out of time, we have this committee scheduled until 12:30. Please come to the testifying table, and whoever the next is, I don't know who the next testifier is, introduce yourself and wrap it up in 2 minutes.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Andy Obst. I am the CEO of Fishless Solution. We are a small family-owned business in Scandia, Minnesota. We make medical devices for complex wound care, and we have commercialized devices that my wife has actually been the inventor of. For many years, we aspired to develop a whole new line of products. However, we struggled to find funding for those devices. And fortunately, we discovered Pat Dillon's Minnesota SBIR Accelerator, and we entered her program, and we submitted an NIH grant proposal, which we won. Just recently, we awarded $1.9 million, which is a significant amount of money. It's very exciting, but I will tell you that these monies are very hard to get, and for an entrepreneur, very challenging. And so just a couple of key points. First off, awareness is low. I had no idea these programs existed until I was fortunate enough to catch Pat at a Medical Alley webinar 2 years ago during the height of the pandemic. I had no idea, but this is money out there that I don't think very many small businesses know anything about. And so that's one reason why we're number 20 on the list in the country. Number two, the process is super arcane. You need a navigator. You cannot do this alone. I tell you, the language, the lingo, the government, dealing with the federal government, no offense, the state government is a challenge. And it's very hard just to navigate the process, and without somebody, a Navy Commodore, Commander.
You gave me a promotion.
Yeah. Commander, to navigate, it's very challenging to get those funds. And so I would tell you that the folks that have gone through Pat's cohorts, we form a team. We're a bit of a club, and I think we create a virtuous cycle because we do build awareness. And so I think the opportunity you have is to fund Pat so she can help more entrepreneurs and create a virtuous cycle of a team that can increase awareness and help others gain these money. So I think this investment is a huge, very important use of our funds in this state. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier, please come to the table and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you. My name is Russ Strati. I'm director of the Venture Center at the University of Minnesota. The Venture Center is part of the Technology Commercialization Group at the university, and we're responsible for the formation, launch, and the ongoing support of startups that are based upon the research at the University of Minnesota. Since the Venture Center was formed in 2006, we've launched 228 companies out of the University of Minnesota, and we're currently on a pace of launching between 20 and 25 startups each year out of the university. Pat and the MIN-SBIR program is a very key ingredient in helping us make that happen. Since MIN-SBIR has been formed, there's been $38 million. $38 million of SBIR and STTR money that has gone into University of Minnesota startups, into 33 of these companies. So that's an average of over $1 million into these companies, which is really very valuable because these tend to be very tech-heavy companies, right? These are biotech, medtech, clean tech companies that require a significant amount of capital in order for them to move into the marketplace. Now, that compares, that $38 million compares to $8 million the same time period before Pat's organization joined the ecosystem. It is very impactful and very important for us to have this resource in the community. Startups at the University of Minnesota that come out and work with her program represent some of the most powerful, some of the most impactful research that's coming out of the labs at the university. They're biotech, medtech, clean tech, food ag startups, and they create obviously potential for economic benefit, but also social benefit as well. They also represent an opportunity for grad students and postdocs to move into a job position with the company, because a lot of these, this is their career dream, is to see their research turn into something of value. So not only does MinSBIR work with the University of Minnesota, but it also helps our partner Mayo Clinic and other organizations in this ecosystem. We're not taking advantage of the federal money like we should. There's much more work that needs to be done, and we appreciate the opportunity to see Pat and her organization funded so that we can do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there one more testifier? All right. Come on down. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, committee members and Madam Chair. I am Candy Sile, and I am the owner of Baby No Bodies, Hearts, and Minds. I have submitted my testimony, so I'll let you look at that. But we are an online program taught by a speech-language pathologist and occupational therapist, two early childhood parent educators, and a wellness instructor to really educate families on supporting the development of their young baby. Last year, not in my testimony, we submitted to the National Institute of Education Science, and there was a grant that was available for SBIR, which was about 200 applicants and only 14 people funded. That supported students from birth all the way up to 12th grade, and then it also incorporated STEM funding. So with the services of Minnesota SBIR, we are now guided to fund or to apply for the National Institute of Health funding, which has a lot more funding available and then also focuses on the development of the young child. We are currently being piloted at two high schools in Minnesota, being used with teen parents to then again support the development of both and the wellness of the parent as well as the development of the baby. And so we stand behind this bill, and we appreciate the services and look forward for this to bring more money to the state of Minnesota to small businesses.
Thank you very much for keeping it very brief. Discussion on the bill. Lee Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. I like the intent of this bill. I just had a question from the somebody in the public that contacted me kind of anonymously. I don't even know who they are, but I just kind of questioned the dollar amount. So MSBIR, I'm sorry. So you help other businesses in these industries get federal grants. The question from the public was just, there are a variety of resources, even just with a Google search or internet search, to help companies obtain these grants. You'd mentioned working with the University of Minnesota. How closely are you working with the University of Minnesota that we should be providing these resources already available for somewhat sophisticated businesses, even though I do recognize that working with either state-level government or federal government is very complex, and somewhat sophisticated industries and businesses should have the wherewithal to reach out to consultants. So I think it was more of a scalability of the grants that was being questioned, and this is new to me, but I like the intent of the bill, and kind of certainly we should help develop companies that need to go to the next level. But that was just a comment that was brought up to me in the public, and if you want to address a couple of those real briefly, otherwise, recognize that the amount is scalable, but the intent is worthwhile, I believe.
Ms. Dillon.
Yes, Madam Chairman and Representative Kosnick. You bring up a very good point. Why don't companies hire a consultant to do this? It costs any time a company hires a consultant, it's going to be at least a $7,000 or $10,000 project. And the success rate is maybe 10 to 15%. So I tell people, you can always come through our free and confidential accelerator to learn how to do it. You can always hire a consultant later. My goal with the accelerator is not only to support the companies through the process of applying, because it is overwhelming, and if that's one word that constantly comes up with entrepreneurs and small businesses, it's overwhelming. They will give up. We don't want them to give up. They have an innovative idea, concept, or project that has strong commercial potential, and they need the help. Because, I mean, even for me, with all the years of my experience, I still get overwhelmed because it is the federal government. There's many moving pieces, And it's hard for anybody that's not familiar with it to navigate that entire process. And it's not only just applying for the funding. It's actually working towards trying to commercialize something, getting them connected to investors, understanding the intellectual property position and the opportunities. And then, as I talked earlier about phase three, the whole goal behind SBIR and SCTR is to de-risk the technology into the point where it's a product or service, and now you can sell it back to the government where there's a fit. And we've had this happen. And we have a company in Stillwater, Minnesota, that was funded by the Navy, phase one, phase two, a few million dollars. And then they were successful in transitioning to phase three, which has resulted into millions of dollars by the Navy buying that product or service that was developed. So we want to be there all along that continuum, and we need to have a larger staff to be able to do that.
Thank you. Rep. Kozlowski?
Thank you, Chair. And Rep. Hansen, and to our testifiers, you know, I was actually just talking with somebody from my community where they had gone through this process of trying to get the NIH grant, and they were able to secure quite a large $10 million grant to be able to do culturally specific work in healthcare around our elders with dementia and Alzheimer's. And the multifaceted complex layers that you're talking about, people who have doctors and master's degree. And so when we're talking about the layers of navigation that's needed for folks who might not have that, you know, expertise and skill set, I think is really important. And, you know, the benefits we are showing within our urban indigenous community and with our tribal nations as well, being able to support. So I really like the aspect of being able to foster and encourage participation by those communities, because a lot of times the research that's been done on us and, you know, against us has been in a bad way. And so to be able to really invest in that infrastructure for us to take it back into our own hands, whether it's on healthcare or cutting edge technology and innovation for the future. So I guess my question would be, can you talk a little bit about how it is that you're working to get this out so that folks know that this resource would be available, that your assistance is there, and help them along the way?
Ms. Dillon.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. So outreach is a big part of what we try to do, and with a one-person operation like myself with a group of ad hoc consultants, it's really hard to get out and about and reach all corners of the state. And so we rely on other partners, and we rely on you know, a very unique network, because it's very competitive to secure these funds. This is not for the faint of heart. It's a high contact sport. And a lot of people, when you talk to them about going after federal funding, they run the other way. And we don't want them to do that. I'm very passionate about making sure that this program and the opportunities are available across the state. And because the ideas or the concepts exist out there, but for people that might be in a startup environment or even a small business, we can go up to 500 employees. I know there are small businesses in greater Minnesota that should be applying, but they're not. And I don't know how else to reach them other than to have a huge marketing push and then getting them connected to the resources and capabilities not only that exist here in Minnesota, but even at the national level. And this is, you know, we have companies that collaborate with other research institutions besides the University of Minnesota or Mayo Clinic. The goal is to support the project, support the technology development effort that needs to be done, and of course and commercializing it, getting it into the hands of the people that can actually use it. Mm-hmm. So I would welcome an opportunity to do a listening session or a webinar sometime in the future. You get them at the table, and I will talk SBIR.
All right. Well, final comments on the bill?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I think I just want to highlight that Pat is really humble, but the money that's come into Minnesota as a result so far has been Pat. This is a one really person-led organization that we really, really are lucky to have in Minnesota, and that I agreed to carry this bill because I think it was worth amplifying the work that Pat's done so far. Both of my brothers are in the service. They work in drone technology, so I've also seen how that technology comes into the commercialization space and like the importance that that has served to a variety of communities and different layers of government. And so I really value this type of investment. And so I just think bringing and supporting good ideas that are here in Minnesota and letting us be an incubator for that, drawing more people to want to live in Minnesota, makes this a better place. And so I think this is also a follow through on like our youth investments in STEM programming too. For many years, since I was in middle school, we have seen adults and grown-ups in the legislature invest in STEM programming, telling us that science, technology, engineering, math, that we should go into these industries, that women and people of color should go into these industries. This is what it looks like to follow through on that word and to make sure we're supporting people at the other end of the spectrum once they've gone through all of the education and have a love for STEM. So thank you so much, Madam Chair, and I'll turn it back to you.
All right. With that, House File 2631 is laid over. Thank you. Our last bill, but definitely not least, is House File 2263 with our minority lead, Kasnick. Lead Kasnick moves that House File 2263 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please introduce your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. It's my pleasure to introduce this House File 2263, which appropriates $4 million to support Minnesota's small and underserved manufacturing companies and their employees. Enterprise Minnesota services many areas, but current demand is high in employee retention, continuous improvement, ISO certification, and strategy and succession planning. These resources are urgent during the incredibly tight labor market to allow our homegrown manufacturers to compete and continue to provide high-wage careers. Investments in manufacturing are investments in Minnesota's communities. Manufacturing workers' wages are 16% higher than the state's average wage, and for every dollar spent in manufacturing, there is a total impact of $2.60 in the overall economy. This bill supports two efforts. One, the Growth Acceleration Program, which has been in state statute since 2008, is a direct investment in small manufacturers that need a boost to help them stay in business and grow. And secondly, it's an outreach effort that will allow Enterprise Minnesota to reach small companies with 35 or fewer employees across the entire state with their services. And these small manufacturers are often overlooked because of their size, but they have made incredible potential to grow and positively impact their communities. And if you think about if you have an industrial park or a commercial area in your particular districts, you drive by some of these manufacturing warehouses or something, you wonder what's going on in there. There's usually a lot more happening and activity than you see with just driving by. So today I have with us Lynn Shelton. She's the Vice President of Enterprise Minnesota, to testify to the value of the legislation, and then Mike Jensen, President of Gothier Industries of Rochester. Is he here? Okay. And we'll talk about how the gap has benefited his company. And also inside your packet, as we were talking about this legislation, I flipped through. I hadn't realized that there was a couple of businesses in the Lakeville District that has benefit from this. One of them is Kevin Delk, Delk Industries. Just like I said, you drive by, it's a one-story brick manufacturing, very nice. But I went in there a number of years ago and was amazed at what they're actually producing, small plastic manufacturing for a variety of things. But also, these people that we are supporting, Kevin, was just tied to this bill, but just happened to be the business person of the year at the Lakeville Chamber of Commerce. So we're supporting community leaders, business owners, job creators, and so that's why I'm happy to support this bill. And we'll turn it over to the testifier and then committee questions. And I also do appreciate the committee's extra time today to get this bill heard. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lynn Shelton, and I serve as a vice president at Enterprise Minnesota. And Enterprise Minnesota, we're a nonprofit consulting organization that's one of 50 manufacturing extension partnership organizations throughout the United States. There's one in all 50 states. Each of us partners with the U.S. Department of Commerce and works with Minnesota's small manufacturing companies to help them compete and grow. We're here today to ask your support for House File 2263, which would invest $2 million in GAP, as Representative Pasadena mentioned, and this is a really impressive job-creating and job-retaining program. And we're also asking $2 million for a new program that will allow Enterprise Minnesota to reach and deliver services to underserved manufacturers in every corner of our state with fewer than 35 employees. Enterprise Minnesota helps small manufacturing companies in Minnesota get the help that they need to stay in business, keep their employees, and grow. Last year, we assisted about 125 of Minnesota's small manufacturing companies, and this bill would allow us to serve many, many more companies and their employees. Both programs funded in this bill will enable Enterprise Minnesota to deliver its advisory services that Representative Kosnick mentioned earlier, particularly in this tight labor market, employee retention, let alone adding new employees. GAP has been in state statute again since 2008 and has achieved widespread bipartisan support over the years because it creates high-quality jobs, brings economic stability to local communities, and it's a proven return on the state's investment by at least $25 for every $1 the state invests. When GAP funds are not available, and that's what happened the last biennium, manufacturers repeatedly tell us that they're not able to invest in improving their companies or invest in retaining their employees. This is true both here in the Twin Cities and in Greater Minnesota, where business improvement services resources are either scarce or too high of a price tag. Finally, in our work, we found a severe lack of assistance for our smallest manufacturers, those under 35 employees. That is where the outreach funding request for this bill comes in. This investment will not only help our smallest manufacturers, who are some of the most innovative companies that we have, it will also unlock federal matching dollars. For every dollar the state invests in these outreach funds, Enterprise Minnesota can leverage a federal dollar from MEP. Without this federal or state match, the federal dollars will be lost and manufacturers will go underserved. Enterprise Minnesota's results are impressive. A national independent survey shows that our clients collectively created and or retained 12,556 jobs in Minnesota. They've boosted and retained company sales by $1.46 billion and saved $206 million in business costs. And these companies have invested $583 in their plant, technology, equipment, and employee skills development. Finally, our current request comes at a particularly urgent time for manufacturers. As I mentioned, the critical labor shortage, you're all familiar with inflation and supply chain challenges that all impact our small manufacturers' ability to operate. HF 2263 will provide them opportunities for enhanced productivity and internal efficiencies that will help them meet these challenges and continue to provide high-wage careers. Manufacturing and maintaining our strength is essential for Minnesota's future. So on behalf of all the small and underserved manufacturers throughout the state, I hope you will support the investments included in this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Mike Jensen. Please come to the testifying table. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
And Madam Chair, if I could, while he prepares.
What was that?
Just also in your packet, there's two other businesses that have benefited from Representative Kozlowski's district or nearby, and so just point the committee's attention to that from Hydro Solutions and the Tongue and Groove Store.
All right, thank you. Please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Johnson, and I serve as president of Gauthier Industries in Rochester, Minnesota. We are a precision metal fabricator with 82 employees and sales of $17 million, and we pride ourselves in shipping quality products with short lead times. We're looking to add employees and new equipment to accommodate the needs of our customers, including OEMs like John Deere and Cummins Power Generation. We must have the means to react quickly to orders, especially with products that require enhanced work to improve quality. Like other Minnesota manufacturers, we rely on many resources to continuously improve and grow. I'm here today to express my strong support of House File 2263. I support this legislation because it will provide small and underserved manufacturers with the ability to remain in business and keep their valued employees. Companies like ours throughout the state of Minnesota are the economic engines that drive our state's manufacturing sector. During the COVID economy, in spite of uncertainty, virtually all manufacturers were recognized and called on as essential businesses that kept going, supporting our employees, clients, and our communities. The economic impact of our business is significant to southeastern Minnesota by way of taxes, employee spending in the area, as well as money we spend with local suppliers. We are also active in several local charity events, including the Boys and Girls Club of Rochester and the Children's Museum of Rochester. We've worked with Enterprise Minnesota for 20 years on many projects, including revenue growth and strategy, leadership training, upgrading our ISO program to 2015, and participating in monthly peer council meetings with other manufacturing leaders. The organization has a great opportunity to provide many more manufacturers with their advisory services, but they can only reach a limited number of companies without state resources. And state funds will help them leverage federal funds and achieve its mandate of serving small companies throughout the state. Enterprise Minnesota consultants are fully dedicated to what their clients' needs are, and they have helped our company get better and better. At Gauthier, we strive to be the best in our field, to be an attractive employer in Rochester, and provide our employees with a pathway to success that leads to long-term employment. I'm very proud of our diverse workforce, as our employees are the top assets in our company. We have accessed the gap part of House File 2263 as a way to increase productivity, expand our customer base, help our employers, and help our employees continuously improve. Ultimately, this legislation will lead to provide ample job opportunities and good-paying wages for Minnesotans. And finally, I extend the invitation for each of you to visit us at Gauthier anytime so you can see our operation firsthand and meet some of our great people. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for listening today, and I urge your support of House File 2263.
Thank you for your testimony. Discussion on the bill, Rep. Richardson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I think my question is for Ms. Shelton. Well, first of all, thank you for your testimony, for the work that you're doing as well. So I noticed that the prioritization was around businesses with 35 or fewer employees. Is there any further prioritization around revenues as you're having to sort of make decisions about how funds are being prioritized when there's limited resources?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got so excited. Right. At this point, we are focusing on the employee size rather than the revenue size at this point, because our client base really varies in terms of revenue size depending on the smaller they are, usually the fewer the dollars of revenue that they have, but we want to make sure that it's from 1 up to 35. Thank you.
All right, Rep. Smith.
This is slightly less substantial. I just want to say thank you to the whole committee for the love for Rochester today. I appreciate you guys recognizing that, and thank you for testifying.
All right, any other members? Rep. Wiener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like the bill we had earlier with reporting in it, I appreciate, you know, in this bill where it has reporting, impact of the funds, where it's going and so forth, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other members? I don't see any final words on the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and I just appreciate the committee's time today. The growth acceleration program, just for the one company that I know of, there's two in Lakeville that I know of, but the one that sent the letter, you know, it helped him grow from a manufacturing company in quiet little Air Lake Industrial Park of 7 employees. Now he's got 37 people, and they're very good paying jobs and providing a good economic benefit to not just the industrial park that they're located in, but really throughout the state.
With that, House File 2263 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Our next meeting will be our regular time, and with no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.